All right. I now have the distinct pleasure of introducing one of our advisory board members and a good friend, Dr. Wolfgang Bauer, University Distinguished Professor at Michigan State University. Wolfgang's one of the more active advisory board members, one of the smartest people I know, knows the energy business backwards and forwards. His family's been in the energy business in Europe for quite some time. And I know you're going to enjoy his presentation. Please welcome Wolfgang Bauer to the stage.
Thank you.
Good morning. So let me just first tell you where MSU is and what we are. We are more than just a football and a basketball team, even though I'm a season ticket holder, so I kind of like that aspect too. We're the largest university in Michigan. We're located where that arrow points. We're founded in 1855, which means that we're older than electricity. We're a member of the American Association of Universities, the leading research universities in the country, and pretty much in every worldwide listing of the top 100 universities, we're included. What's most important for the purpose of my talk here is that we're a land-grant university with a contiguous
good morning, guys.
Campus.
How are you doing?
About
5,500
acres. And so we can use this as our energy playground.
What's that?
So we're a living learning lab with our own cogen plant and microgrids. And since 1894, we were the only place that
make sure if you leave, make sure someone else knows
and,
to expect her.
Even though Michigan is a regulated state, we retained the right to generate our own electricity through a century plus. So this is the history of power generation at MSU, and we started really burning wood. In 1904, we got a railroad connection, and so that started the coal age at MSU, and in 2016, we switched completely to natural gas. There's a whole series of power plants that you can see on the right-hand side of this slide that we built through the years, and we just built a new one. It's not a renewable power plant, and
I'll tell you why.
I'm particularly proud of this project.
I was hoping you were going to be at dinner last night.
My daytime job is being a professor.
I haven't taught for a good 10 years
while I was working in the executive management.
When you set up, okay, what time did you get in?
I taught another introductory physics lecture. And, you know, us theoretical physicists, we always have approach that we want to develop the theory of everything. You know, Einstein tried to do that, and you may have heard of Stephen Hawking or Brian Greene.
Okay.
The idea is to condense all of our world into one equation that explains everything.
So you can get back to work.
And I'm not going to sell a book on this, but I will tell you the theory of everything condensed into one equation for free today. And here it is. I know equations, you may think back to your college days and you go, equation, I have to learn that by heart. Yeah, this is going to be on the test. But here it is. Energy is money. And I'll come back several times to this, but in the previous discussion, we just heard that some customers are paying a premium for green energy. And I would argue that this is counterproductive for what we all want to do. Green energy has to be cheaper than brown energy. Otherwise, with this equation, you're not only wasting money, but you're also wasting energy. So perhaps you're not doing as much good for the planet as you think you are, and maybe it's just the reverse. If you're overpaying for your energy, then you're wasting energy and you're harming the planet in the process. So this will be a general theme that I'll come back to again and again. So this is underlying supporting information for this statement. What I plot here is the horizontal axis is the gross domestic product per person per year for a country in U.S. dollars. These are 2010 and 2012 data. And you can see every country is, most major countries are represented here. And the vertical axis is the energy used per person per year. And you can sort of see that this is the general tendency. As you want to get richer as a country, you have to consume more energy. And so you see the U.S. is up there in the upper right corner. Most of the world wants to get where we are, and so that means more and more energy will be consumed worldwide. So this is a problem. And what I plot here is a figure from my textbook. And you can see this is as a function of the year, the world electrical power production in terawatt. And it's going steeply up. It's increasing linearly. And you see there is now, as opposed to when I published the first edition in 2010, solar was basically invisible on this scale. And now we have a sizable slice of solar and wind that contributes to the world electricity production. And you go, all right, so we're making progress. But what you also should see is that fossil fuel electricity production is still steeply increasing. So we're not acting fast enough. And by the way, nuclear and hydro are also sizable slices there. So most of the world still runs on fossil fuels. Energy is money, after all. Burning those fossil fuels emits carbon dioxide, among other pollutants, and to the tune of 30 billion tons per year. So this is the main cause of global warming. Since we are a world-leading university, a few of us got together and said, what good is leadership if you don't execute it? And so in 2012, we wrote this energy transition plan that would get us out of our coal-fired power plant that makes our electricity and heats the buildings into a green future. So we proposed these steps to a transition to 100% renewable energy. And we set these five-year targets of renewable energy contribution to our campus and greenhouse emission reductions. And that was approved in 2012 by our Board of Trustees, and so this has been our sort of guideline that we have been following since then. So this is a laundry list of the kind of things we have done. It's not just about electricity and reduction of fossil fuel consumption, it's also recycling. So we have a recycling and reuse center, reduce, reuse, recycle, we take that serious. We have an organic waste composting facility. We put in a geothermal array that heats our College of Nursing. We put an anaerobic digester in that processes our cafeteria food. It makes some electricity and through biogas production, and it also produces organic fertilizer that we spread out on the farm fields that are part of MSU. This is a copy of the anaerobic digester that my brothers and I own in Germany, so I just brought that over wholesale, put the same developer in charge. What I mainly want to talk about is our solar arrays. But before I do that, I just want to make sure that I get this message across. Demand reduction is perhaps more important than installation of renewable energy resources, because the greenest energy is simply the energy that you do not use. And so we decided to invest on the order of $10 million per year in these energy conservation measures. And the idea was that we would approve pretty much everything that had an ROI time of 5 years or less. And so we participated in the DOE Better Building Challenge, in the DOE Data Center Challenge, and we also created something which we called Spartan Treasure Hunts together with GE, and it's heavily borrowed from, let's say, from the Toyota approach. So solar, why do solar in the northern part of the country where, it snows and winters are cold and so on? And this is a very useful map that guides me, because it shows you what the usable solar radiation is through the year, day and night, seasonally averaged. And what you see is, okay, you know, Arizona and Florida and so on, they've worked really well, but Michigan is only at a disadvantage of 10% or less, which to many people is very surprising, right? So we're almost as successful in capturing the sun in Michigan as you could be here. So I don't expect you to read anything on this graph. I just want you to see that all these lines are pointing upward, because this is as a function of the year, that's the horizontal axis, the efficiency of solar cells, both that are commercially deployed and that are in research environments, and they're all going up as a function of time. So PV cells are getting more and more efficient, and that's great news, but even better news is on the next slide. They're getting vastly cheaper, and notwithstanding the recent hiccup due to this filing with the Department of Commerce, you know, if you look for the last 50 years, solar cells have fallen per watt produced by a factor of 200, and there is pretty much no end in sight right now. So the PV cells themselves are not dominating the cost anymore, but it's the other physical infrastructure, you know, the support structure and so on, and the transformers and the cabling that provide a lower limit for the price of PV. So in 2016, we started this process of constructing MSU solar carport arrays. We engaged in a competition. Innovators and then Altera won the bid for a power purchase agreement. The power purchase agreement is for 25 years, so we're not afraid of long lifetimes of power purchase agreements, because we've been around for over 150 years, and we expect firmly to be around at least another 500 years or so. That may sound long to you, but the university where I got my PhD has been around for over 1,000 years, University of Gießen in Germany. So our carport arrays cover 5,000 parking spots. They are on 45 acres of parking lots. We use 40,000 solar panels. The AC peak power is almost 11 megawatt, actually, and we're harvesting 15,000 megawatt hours per year of solar energy. And this project, since it has a 25-year lifetime with a fixed cost per kilowatt hour written into the contract, it will save over $10 million in electricity cost for MSU over the 25-year duration of the PPA. And I calculated that assuming a gas price of $2.50 per 1,000 cubic feet, which is now a joke so low, right? So these 10 million are extremely conservative estimates.
I meant to turn this
probably
off when
much
I was
more
outside,
than 20 million.
I turned it back on. I just want to make sure
the current gas costs are any indication. But remember, my central theory of everything is energy is money, and this project shows that green power is already cheaper than brown power. I also want to give a shout out to Customer First Renewables, who helped us through this bidding process. And they didn't just execute their contract and then walk away. When the developer got into trouble with the tax that they had to pay, and we couldn't negotiate. My president told me I have to stay out of that because she was worried about income tax negotiation with the city. Customer First Renewables negotiated on our and developers' behalf, and they got the city to waive 86% of the taxes. So that's why I keep sending customers to them, because they do a great job. So this is the developed part of our campus, the upper one-third or so. And you know, you can see Spartan Stadium there in the basketball arena. And so then the question was, where do we site these solar arrays? They have to be on the parking lots so we don't destroy farmland. And so this is where we put them. And this is just a drawing. But, you know, they say astronauts can see the Chinese wall from space. I don't know if that's true, but this is a satellite picture taken from space. And you can see our solar arrays from space, so they're really there. In the winter, it snows in Michigan, and so this is for one full year, the first full year of operation, and you can see that there is this gap there on the left side, which is when the arrays were snow-covered, but for the rest of the time, they produce just as expected, and we're getting our money's worth. But you can also see it goes up and down, right? That's the intermittency that you have to somehow control, which is, you know, it can happen a 5-megawatt swing within 10 minutes or so, or even less. And our conventional power plant was not able to provide the ramp rate to compensate for that. So we had to do something about that. And so this is our newest power plant. It's my baby. It's operational since March of this year. It's a recip engine power plant. It has the ramp rate that's required to follow the intermittency induced by the renewables. It is highly efficient. And so it replaces part of the old power plant, and it leads to emissions reductions, but also to a lot of savings in fuel. And so just last month, May, this power plant saved $700,000 in fuel savings. Here's me in my more casual business outfit. I was going to wear the same outfit again, but my wife advised against it. So these are all 20-cylinder engines, and each one is good for 10-megawatt electricity output at an efficiency of 41 or 42%, which is spectacular. And so then at the last Ponte Vedra meeting, I was sitting at this table and I asked John for permission. And I said, John, you know, I would like to build another 20-megawatt array. Is it okay if I stand up and say, hey, we're doing this, we're looking for partners? And he's like, yeah, that's what we're here for. And so that's what I did. And several of the developers approached me that same day. Among them was NextEra, and actually we executed the contract with them. Again, with help from Smart Energy Decisions and Customer First Renewables, who was our bidding partner again, we signed this contract with NextEra. It's a 30-year contract, so it will, well, I'm hoping I'm outliving this contract, but you can never be sure. So it was signed in December 2020. Because we had to wait for this rice plant to get up and running, and because NextEra had some constraints where they wanted to serve another customer in our area at the same time, we decided to postpone the construction start until April of this year. But then, of course, you know, came this filing with the Department of Commerce that was only resolved yesterday. So yesterday evening, I was sitting next to Jessica Johnson, and we both texted with Itai, trying to see, okay, how fast can we get everything going? And I wanted to make sure that I'm not telling you a lie, you know, that NextEra doesn't have to step away from the contract. So this is still going on. This is the southern part of campus that I'm showing here. It's all farm fields, basically, and there's 110 acres or so of meadows and some wetlands that we have to build around. This was previously used for sheep and cattle grazing, and we'll build that ground mount solar array there, again in a power purchase agreement with them. And the sheep still can graze under that array. It's actually very helpful. They keep the vegetation down so you don't have to spend money on mowing expenses, which is a big deal. So this only happened because this community gets projects done. And this is what the extreme value is, at least for me, and I hope for many of you in the audience, of these type of meetings. And so what about our emissions? So we started counting in 2006 when we were completely powered by coal. And you can see that MSU, our scope 1 and 2 emissions are completely tied together because we produce our own electricity and we heat our own buildings. So we just imported in 2006 coal by the trainload. and then burned it. And we emitted almost 600,000 tons of CO2 per year to keep the operation going. So we're like a medium-sized city, you know, 60,000 students, about 10,000 employees. And then this fuel switch from coal to natural gas happened in 2016. And we talked earlier about, yesterday, about stakeholder pressure. So our students are very active, and they, you know, MSU's color is green, right? And so we want to be the green university. And so I, behind the scenes, I collaborated with some of these student organizations, for example, Beyond Coal, and got them to come to the Board of Trustees meeting and demand that we get out of coal. And that was very helpful. And so this fuel switch, just from coal to natural gas, eliminated about 200,000 tons of CO2 emissions. And then we built the digester in 2017, and then the carport solar array in 2018. And that pushed us under the 300,000 ton. And now in 2020, we started construction of this rice plant. It, as I said, just became operational this March, partially delayed by COVID, of course. And this new rice power plant has actually a bigger effect on our carbon emissions than the digester and the solar arrays combined. And the next 20 megawatt solar array, I said 2021, which is when we signed the contract, but it hasn't started yet, so that's why the word future is there. But it will, again, reduce our emissions probably under the 200,000 ton per year limit. Now, at the same time, over that 15-year time span, our building footprint has increased by 1.5 million square feet. So we have drastically increased our student numbers, our research portfolio. We built a completely new national lab on campus for $800 million or so. And that's all included there, and yet our emissions have fallen by almost two-thirds. So it can be done by energy savings measures, by inclusion of renewable energies, and by clever use of fossil fuels, you know, in a transition fuel kind of thinking. This is not the end of it, but right now this is the best we can do. And we reduced our emissions and we're saving money. So what's next? I know that most of our energy is really needed for heating the buildings, and you can't get away from that. It gets very cold in the winter in Michigan. So we've looked into geothermal heating. We haven't found a way that this pencils out. So I'm looking for proposals. If you want to offer something, I am all ears. Fleet electrification. So John said we're going to talk more about this at the Net Zero Forum. But MSU has started this. So we have 370 new electric vehicles that we will purchase this decade as we turn over our fleet. 40 are coming this year. We even have an electric self-driving bus that we just put into operation. This is Sparty there boarding this bus. And it just goes up and down Farm Lane, which is the main commuter route between our largest commuter parking lot and the North Campus. And this is part of the proving ground for something called the Autonomous Bus Consortium, ABC, where many transportation agencies across the country have pooled their resources to get this fully self-driving electric bus project off the ground to provide critical mass. MSU is the only university member there. I just published a column in Smart Energy Decision, and hopefully you'll have time to read this. As we step towards a larger and larger fraction of electric vehicles on the road, we have to change our grid in a fundamental way. And part of it is that the need to rethink how we charge these EVs. And so I'm advocating for swappable batteries in at least heavy-duty trucks and delivery vehicles, um, So I talked with a representative from Amazon who's here. Sorry, I forgot your name, but you know, the 80,000 vehicles that Amazon is buying from Rivian, I think that needs to be the first step that needs to be done there. Otherwise, this is not sustainable. But it can be done. So we're doing research on this right now. We have a fairly large grant that I'm working on that will design a vehicle and recharging structure like I sketched it there. Okay, so this is our MSU energy transition plan that I started out with, and I just on the left side I can show you what the goals were and how we're doing. So by 2020 we were supposed to have 20% of our campus powered by renewables. Assuming that the 20 megawatt array that we're building together with NextEra goes into operation this year or maybe next year, we will actually have a peak power of 54% renewables. So we're there. Greenhouse gas emissions reductions, we called for 45% in 2020. We've done over 65%. So we're on the right track. We're getting there. Smart energy decisions, making smart energy decisions has really helped and will help in the future. My contact info is there, including my private cell number, so don't deal that out to anybody. I'm just giving you this as my close personal friends. And I thank you for your attention.
Wolfgang, thank you so much. That was awesome. It's great to see the overall progress, and that one chart really embodied how emission reductions is everything, with renewables just being an important piece of it. Unique opportunity to ask Wolfgang, is there anyone in the audience that would like to field a question? The image last night, Wolfgang, of you being at the dinner table with a representative from NextEra texting Itai saying, hey, what's the status of our deal? I wish I had that on video. That would be fantastic. No questions? Oh, there's one in the back.
Good morning, and thank you for your presentation. I'm with Rhode Island College. We're a state institution. I'm wondering how you manage the state purchasing regulations that you may be subjected to.
Yeah, so first of all, Michigan, the state of Michigan is a regulated state. That actually makes our life a lot easier because, you know, that keeps the electricity prices artificially high and makes our projects pencil out better. So we don't have to go to the state government for permission to do these type of deals. What we do have to do is we have to have a public bidding process, and it has to be all above board. So we have to give public notice on our websites and so on, so all developers can participate. And it was not something like where Itai and I got together and we hashed this out over a cocktail at a tavern. I invited them to come, and they were really eager, and then they were among the 25, I think, bidders that bid for our project, and we just took the best offer, which happened to be them.
Any other questions? Okay, Wolfgang, thank you very much.
Thank you.